This is the Country Hour with Megan Hughes on ABC Radio Queensland.
Good afternoon. Thank you for your company. I'm going to start in the north today, where severe weather and flood warnings are in place for northwest and northeast Queensland. For the northwest and western Queensland, heavy to locally intense rain is expected to continue in some areas today. 6 hourly rainfall totals of up to 120 millimetres are likely, and isolated rainfall of up to 160 mils. Now, the key locations in this warning area include Winton, Cloncurry, Normanton, Richmond, Julia Creek, Croydon, Kawinyama, Dejara and Delta Downs Station. For the northeast tropical coast, heavy rain is forecast to redevelop between Cairns and Rolling Stone later today. 6 hour totals of up to 180 millimetres are likely, with isolated falls of up to 220 millimetres possible. Key locations in this warning area include Cairns, Palm Island, Ingham, Yarrabah, Cardwell and Tully. And there's multiple flood watches and warnings in places across northern and western Queensland. This includes a major flood warning for the Flinders River and moderate flood warnings for the Cloncurry, Norman and Western Rivers. Flood warnings are also current for the Bowley, Diamantina, Gilbert, Leichhardt, Nicholson and Tully Rivers, as well as a more general flood watch for many northern and northwest areas of the state. Heavy to intense rainfall could cause river levels to rise quickly, which can be dangerous and lead to flash flooding. I'll bring you the latest details in full when I check in with the Bureau of Meteorology just after 12:30. So to the northwest now, where monsoonal rain and flooding across the northwest of the state has producers worried for how the situation can continue to develop. Days of constant rain has dropped upwards of 400 millimetres across some parts of the region, causing rivers and creeks to swell. At Floraville Station in the Gulf, the rain has eased this morning, but more rain further south towards Mount Isa could see floodwaters rise around the area. Grazier and Mayor of the Berkshire, Ernie Camp, is speaking here with Madeline McCosker.
Well, since Christmas, we've only had 225 mil. Which is very much appreciated because it has been general rain. However, there's been falls around us in the last 24 hours between 100 and 150 mils in the upper river catchments, and that's just made us a little bit nervous considering 2023.
Yeah. So can you talk to me a little bit about, I guess, what it is about this event that's making you nervous when you do think about 2023 and maybe how the two compare?
Yes, it's how they compare, I suppose, in a sense. 23 was later in March and this is early in the season, which is probably a good thing because a lot of the river systems hadn't had a regional flow in them. But now that's they've all had a reasonable flow to moderate flooding. So it only takes one night of heavy rainfall, especially in the upper catchments in the area around Mount Isa, where the disaster began in 2023, because rainfall in that area is on high ridges and most of that runs off and comes to the north. If it moves a little bit further south, well, the possible disaster is heading the other direction. At the moment, it's sort of stalled around the Mount Isa area, and there has been heavier falls around there, and seems to be moving a little bit east as well. So it just takes a night of heavy falls, as we learned out in 2023, to turn what from a minor flooding event to an extraordinary flooding event.
Yeah. Speaking to people, a lot of the maybe uncertainty at the minute is about where this or how this will develop because, you know, this non-stop kind of monsoonal rain, the cooler temperatures, the wind chill, that's the concern for a lot of people right now. And weather as it is, you know, people aren't able to get into helicopters and move livestock. So how do you think people are feeling in that space about being able to get out and move their stock when they need to, you know, in the fact that they can't necessarily do that right now?
I think most of people are concerned of these things, but there are certain things outside your control, and the best thing that they can do is look after themselves, look after their families and their loved ones, and take small steps to secure your assets, whatever it is around your homestead and stuff like that. But certainly don't take risks. We have enough at risk now without risking lives. So I suppose the best thing you can do, and it's hard to do at the time, is focus on the positive. You know, the rain will stop, the grass will grow, and the cattle will become fat. Nature will come back alive again, which it does so many times, but sometimes there has been a big cost to pay, both personally with livestock and even the wonderful Australian nature around us.
I mean, you said earlier that it is easing off a little bit. You've had a bit of a break in the rain. The forecast is suggesting that it might start moving south, which I guess it can be a good thing depending on how far south it goes, but it could also be a tricky situation for yourself and in that area that you're in, because as you said earlier, you know, if that rain falls in those ridges around Mount Isa, that flows back to you and that's more water on top of what you've already had. So I guess how closely are you watching as this develops and then the forecast coming for the next few days?
Oh, certainly keeping on as much as I can. We're now starting to move stuff to a higher ground. But you're exactly right. If it goes further south on those high areas around Mount Isa, most of that will come directly back to the north. Of course, if it goes a little bit further south, we then risk the flooding of an area that was seriously flooded the last year. So it's somewhat a plus, but we wouldn't want to wish what anybody do be create major flooding further south as well. So we just hope that nature plays a little bit kinder than the last few years, and that we will see sunshine shortly. And of course, we've then got to worry about the next 3 months, and hopefully it be again be kind to us, and we can look forward to the rebirth of nature in its fine greenery.
That's Ernie Camp, who's a grazier and mayor of the Berkshire Council, speaking to Madeline McCosker. Now, concerns are building across the northwest over this monsoonal rain and flooding after days of non-stop rain. Places around Normanton have seen more than 240 millimetres fall in a 24-hour period over the weekend, and the forecast suggests upwards of 500 millimetres could still fall in the coming days. Ashley Gallagher from Sawtell Creek Station explains to Madeline McCosker what it's been like.
About 450 mils since like Christmas Eve.
Wow, so quite a bit of rain in just a few days.
Yeah, quite a bit of rain, and we actually have not had as much as what the town of Normanton has had, even though we're only 26 kilometres away. The town of Normanton's had a lot more than that, and some of the places around us have had a lot more than that. So,
yeah, we were speaking yesterday and you said your neighbour had 240 or so mils in 24 hours.
Yes, yeah. And and places like out at the Flinders River on the Cloncurry Road, they've had nearly 300 in a bit over 24 hours, but yeah.
The forecast, you know, is looking like there's still a lot more on the way. That's pretty concerning, I guess, after that much rain in just a few days. You know, some people are expecting up to 500 mils over, you know, as little as 4 days. So how are you feeling about a forecast like that?
Not good. All the rivers are flooded now, you know, like the rivers are over bridges and stuff like that. So places are isolated. We've got, yeah, we need to, if it comes any, well, it will come higher because it's now starting to rain up in the catchment. So, yeah, we need a little bit of a break in the weather to get some helicopters up here and shift some cattle.
That's sort of a big concern as well, because when we were speaking yesterday, you said it's quite cool as well, and you know, you don't want to say it, but somewhat reminiscent of 2019. Is there a lot of concern that that's where this is heading?
Yeah. I think there's it's pretty fresh in everybody's mind. There's a real concern. This amount of rain, very very similar conditions. So yeah, everybody's pretty worried about that. They're getting a bit anxious to try and get stuff done, and it's the weather's not actually allowing us to get it done at the minute. So
It's been pretty consistent rain over the days that you've been getting this rain. It hasn't really let up at all until you just said this morning. So, you know, that kind of monsoonal rain, the not a lot of sunlight, it doesn't really stop. That's quite a concern, as you've just said. Properties are already cut off. There's a lot more rain coming. Communities completely cut off as well. How are you going out your way? You know, are you prepared for this kind of flooding? Have you got supplies? How are you all going?
Yeah, most places would have supplies. And I guess the good thing is, like, councils up here, you know, they're used to it. They're pretty supportive. They, once people get cut off and that, they start doing a bit of a ring around, and like I said, once the helicopters can fly, a lot of people fly supplies in like that. The town itself, normally we can get trucks up to the other side of the river and boat stuff in, but I guess it's a part of every wet season, really. But it's never good. It's not an easy task to do or anything like that. Everyone, if we don't have to do it, it's good. But yeah. We just got to get on with it and do it.
Mm. And you said as well that you'd had some earlier rain at the start of December, which helped the cattle to build up a bit of condition and strength. So I guess how much do you think that will help in a situation like this where you've got the non-stop rain, you've got the wind chill, conditions aren't, you know, great for livestock up in the northwest right now, but how much will that rain have helped, do you think?
It will have helped a bit. Obviously, there's a lot of places here that had fires from, so the rain was good in early December to put a bit of green grass back where the fires were. So yeah, the cattle were fairly strong. So hopefully. Yeah, I mean, there will be losses because of the cold. There'll be calves and things like that that can't survive this constant rain and cold. But it could be a lot worse. It could have been way worse if we didn't get that early rain.
Yeah. Anything else, Ashley, that you want to add in there before I let you go?
Yeah, I do, actually.
Yeah?
I want to add in that I'm pretty disappointed in the bomb website. Not so much their radars or anything like that, that's, we can all look at the old one, but we've got all these automatic readers on the rivers to tell us what's coming, and on the Norman River there's like four or five of them that aren't working or not reading. On the Flinders River there's like seven of them that aren't working. Like, it's kind of hard to, we all know it's going to come, but yeah, it's a little bit harder to prepare if you don't know if they've already got rain or not up there. Yeah, so I don't know how they make it work, but a lot of these readers weren't working last wet season either, so it looks like nobody's done anything in the dry time.
That's Ashley Gallagher from Sawtell Creek Station speaking with Madeline McCosker, and the Weather Bureau has been contacted for comment.
On your radio, online and on the ABC Listen app, this is the Country Hour on ABC Radio Queensland.
Thank you for your company today. If you want to join the conversation, let me know what the weather's been like at your place. Have you had much rainfall? You can send me a text 0487 993 222. I'd really love to hear from you today. But now I'm going to take you to the northeast coast, to Tully, where heavy rain is already falling. Rice McDonald is a local cane grower, and he explains to Sophie Johnson how much they've had.
There's 72 here where we are at Urino, the bottom end of Urino, and another 307 this morning at 5:30. So we're getting up there, and today, since 5:30, there's another 50-odd mils in there. So we're getting up there, getting close to half a metre in the last couple of days.
Yeah, so pushing above that 400 mil mark, you reckon?
Yeah. It's not uncommon for this time of year, but we prefer it a bit later when it comes to the cane crop, obviously, because of the high rainfall and also the lack of sunlight stops the cane from growing. You can hear us getting a bit heavy in the background, so it's on again.
What will this mean for you on farm, having this much rain right now?
Well, it obviously stops any proceedings of farm work from going anywhere, because it's getting a bit wet to be doing any sort of paddock work, obviously, and even slashing the headlands or maintaining the headlands. It's going to be impossible to do anything until it dries up, and even after the sun comes out, it's going to take quite a few days before anything happens.
How concerned are you about a flooding event?
Oh, not really at this stage. It's very localised, close to the shoreline. And anything about, yeah, you know, like going inland at this stage has not been a great deal, not like on the coastal fringes here. Yeah, I've heard reports of 120, 100, 180, but nothing over the top. And if we're going to get a flood, that's where it comes from, up closer to the range. And that, you know, the higher the rainfall, closer to the range, obviously, in the catchment areas is where the rain, where the floods come from.
What did it sound like? Was it very intense at certain points in this last 24-hour period, or has it been just consistently?
Well, it's quite consistent. Obviously, at stages, at times, it was heavier than at other times, but for durations. But, yeah, pretty intense for the 24-hour period. It calmed back about 2 o'clock this morning for a little while, and until about 4, then it picked up again. You could hear on the roof. Quite intently, but it happens regular basis this time of year. It's expected.
Are people around town preparing for a big weather event?
Oh, yeah. People do tend to turn up at the supermarkets unexpectedly, especially when they're forecasting. You look on social media and there's different entities putting up huge rainfall coming, so people do tend to head to the shops quite quickly these days to stock up.
How much rain do you reckon you've had here for the entire year?
Oh, I've done a bit of a summary on that the other day. We're before this rainfall event, we're over 4.6 metres, so 4.63 metres, I think that was Tully. So add another 500 onto that, so we're over the 5 metre mark.
Is this the biggest rain event that you've seen so far this year?
Yes, probably, yeah. It's certainly here at Urimo, at where we are, Baltimore Rock and Ham Road. It's first time this year, I think, the rain gauge has been full in one 24-hour period.
So more than that sort of January, February period where we saw those pretty intense falls as well?
Yeah, it's more like the February rain than it is end of December rain. But, like, it's not unusual, but it's probably... well, 2-3 years ago we had that Jasper, so a bit of rain in that, but it's nothing out of the ordinary.
How much more are you expecting over the coming days?
Well, I'd say another day of this. Well, as that tropical low is inland from us, it moves away, this will draw it with it, or draw it to the south.
What sort of impacts do you think there'll be for the wider sort of farming Tully community?
Well, I don't know about the community but itself, but it'd certainly be a yield... potential yield stop at this stage until the sun comes out again. The heavy rain bruises any sort of vegetation, it bruises around it, so a couple of days before it starts to recover and grow again once the sun comes out.
That's Tully cane grower Bryce McDonald speaking to Sophie Johnson. And oh my goodness, you can just hear the rain absolutely pouring down where they are in Tully today. Up next, I'll give you a look at what some of the flood prep has been happening in the north ahead of all this rain.
And this cricket on Sunday, join ABC Sport for the fifth Ashes Test between Australia and England. Hear every ball of the cricket all summer long.
The Ashes.
On your radio and on the ABC Listen app.
On your radio, online and on the ABC Listen app. This is the Country Hour on ABC Radio Queensland.
So you can hear that the wet season is definitely underway in North Queensland. You know, earlier in the show, you've heard from graziers in the northwest and also a cane grower in Tully about just how heavy and how much rain they've had just in the last couple of days. And as this wet season gains momentum, once again, communities have been preparing as much as they can for these flooding rains. But alongside the rising water, another risk presents itself: food insecurity. Sophie Johnson has the story.
Every day, food for millions of people around the world travels up and down the Bruce Highway. It's the 1,600-kilometre connection between Cairns and Brisbane, and when it floods, the impact extends far beyond the area of inundation. When a once-in-a-century flood wreaked havoc on Ingham earlier this year, it also took out the main supply route between Cairns and Townsville. For North Queenslanders like Jay Baird, the isolation was nothing new, but he says the food shortages were noticeably worse.
At the time, actually, I was living in Mareeba, but in general, in the whole place, it was quite difficult to find pretty much most things, especially sort of the more fresher produce sort of things, surprisingly. Everything from eggs, which was a consistent thing throughout most of the year, actually. But even just the more the processed things too were difficult. Mareeba, thankfully, with a bit of its food coming from other places, was a little bit better. They got it from more local sources, but definitely in Cairns, the perishables and otherwise were pretty bad when I was buying for Mum and Dad. When we get our floods at our worst and the rail get cut, we get things like that.
In Mareeba, about an hour's drive west of Cairns, Angela Nason was doing everything she could to keep her produce store open.
We worked our butts off during that time. We had loads and loads of customers. We had to shut the shop for 2 days because our entire shop was cleaned out within a morning, and we had to go out to the farms twice more to go pick up more produce. So we kind of knew it was going to happen, but to that scale, we had no idea, because when you're talking about 300,000 people within our area to feed who were scrambling for fruit and vegetables, we just had to literally knuckle down and do the absolute best we could.
Unlike the supermarkets that source from central markets in Brisbane, she buys direct from farmers on the Atherton Tablelands. She says some consumers were shocked to learn their fruit and veg came from down south.
People were questioning, why is there no fruit and vegetables on the shelves? They had no idea at all. So the word got around quite quickly that Tablelands produce is sent down south, and that's why they don't have food. The roads being cut with the floodwaters, meaning that the truck's not being able to come up. So I think it opened up the eyes of people.
As the rain continued to fall, more and more roads closed, and for longer than usual. Les Blennerhassett from Blenner's Transport, one of the biggest freight companies in the north, says roads couldn't cope.
Our biggest issue was the gear lock, which doesn't need a lot of rain to close that. It costs us, as transports, a lot of money to leave drivers stuck in Towns or Ingham or in Tully that can't get through that. So Gearlock's first, and once Seymour follows, and then, yeah, then we're really, really, we are shut down then, yeah. You know, we've still got the same crossing that's been, you know, 50, 80 year old, and we're still living with it every wet season in North Queensland. And as all the Cairns people would know, like, the shelves were empty when that road closed down, so we can't get bananas out. We can't get fruit and veg and groceries into Cairns at those times.
He's met with the state government and is calling on the federal government to fund a fix.
Start getting them fixed so we can be more sustainable in North Queensland to move our produce and get all our groceries back into North Queensland in flood times. Definitely nothing can happen before this current wet season, but I hope the gearlock will get moving next year for the following wet season.
Queensland Transport and Main Roads says during the event, 165 state-controlled roads were closed or restricted in the north. Labor's federal member for Leichhardt, Matt Smith, says from Cairns to the Cape, food supply suffered.
The long and short of it is we just ran out. You know, we've had food shortages before. It's not unusual for Cairns to get cut off, but this one seemed particularly hard hit. And, yeah, it was a tough few days.
But he says precautions have already been taken to prevent a repeat of the shortage.
We've done what we can ahead of this year's wet season. What has been done is I wrote to Woolworths and C-Swift back in September to make sure that people were ready, basically, for what was coming. And the reason that I wrote to Woolworths is because Woolworths is in Weipa, and they also supply a lot of the CEQs around the Cape. And just to ensure that those supply lines were taken care of. And, you know, to their credit, Woolworths have stepped up in a massive way. There's like a 20 to 30,000 extra pallets in Cairns at the moment of dried goods, nappies, toilet paper, non-perishable items that we're going to have access to. I have spoken to the CEQs up in Cowan and Lockhart. Lockhart's actually pretty good because they take everything by barge anyway, so they don't really worry about it too much. But Cowan has started stockpiling already. They're prepared. You know, there were a lot of lessons that came out of last year and out of Jasper that we weren't prepared for, but everyone has taken real hard look at and tried to learn from. And I'm glad that the supermarkets and the storage companies, everyone's taken this really, really seriously and taken steps to make sure that we aren't put in that situation again. And the federal government's taking it very, very seriously in building back and improving these roads to make them as floodproof as possible.
Both the state and federal government have announced multiple funding programs to improve the Bruce. Queensland's Minister for Transport and Main Roads, Brent Mickleberg, says that includes $50 million for upgrades north of Ingham between Gearlock and Ripple Creek.
This work will provide some safety upgrades. It'll replace culverts to improve the drainage, widen the road, and it will importantly lift that section of the highway to be more flood resilient. I think it's important to note is not going to remove all flooding, but it will certainly reduce the time frame by which the Bruce Highway goes out of that section of the road.
That project is currently out for tender, and a detailed design is also underway for a separate $48 million project to upgrade the Gairlock floodway. Mr. Mickleberg says it's all about reducing how long the road is out of action.
It's all about the time of inundation. So currently the time frame, the average time of inundation is in excess of a day for that section of road. We want to ensure that we meaningfully reduce that. We want to try to couple these two projects together to ensure they're part of a larger commitment to upgrade the flood resilience of that entire section. We're going to continue to have flood incidents in North and Far North Queensland in the wet season. Unfortunately, that's a reality of life. What we need to ensure is that we minimise those impacts wherever possible while we build a better Bruce Highway.
For locals like Jay Baird, his preparations continue with little faith in funding announcements.
They seem to have been chipping away at the roads for the last 20 years and still haven't changed much in that side of things. So Ingham seems to be in a perpetual state of roadworks, and yet nothing seems to have changed in terms of that flooding. Certain areas are better than others than they used to be, but they're still flooding.
That's Cairns resident Jay Baird ending that story from Sophie Johnson. Now, in a statement from Woolworths Assistant State Manager for Queensland, Sophie Hobden, she says that Woolworths has taken proactive steps to increase stock levels in the region ahead of the wet season following a disaster preparedness campaign across Far North Queensland in October. She says they have positioned 6 shipping containers in Cairns and other locations across the region, and they're each filled with essential items to be deployed to nearby stores in the event of a natural disaster. And I'll have the latest on the weather with the Bureau of Meteorology up next.
Power outages can occur anytime without warning and could last hours, days, or even weeks. Are you prepared? Find a handy guide on how to deal with power outages on the ABC Emergency website. Your emergency broadcaster is ABC Radio.
This is the Country Hour on ABC Radio Queensland.
Time to check in on the weather, and Shane Kennedy joins me now from the Bureau of Meteorology. Good afternoon, Shane.
Afternoon, Megan.
So there's obviously a lot happening across the state. We'll start in the northwest. What's the latest?
So we have a severe weather warning for heavy to locally intense rainfall and damaging wind gusts in the northwest. It's extending from Kawanyama down to Winton at the moment, though has cleared from the far northwest around Burketown and Mornington Island out of it at the moment, and Mount Isa sort of right on the fringe. So expect we'll see similar rainfall over the next few days at least. So we've already been seeing rainfall typically in that 30 to 150 millimetre range, and even pushing up to around 300 millimetres to the east of Normanton in the past 24 hours. So expect we could see similar rainfall totals today and tomorrow. May start to ease a little bit from Wednesday. So the main culprit, the tropical low, starts to weaken.
And in the northeast?
So the northeast is a bit more of a focused area just along the northeast coast from just to the north of Cairns to Rollingstone, to the north of Townsville. And that's just for heavy rainfall at the moment. So may still see some locally intense rainfall here and there, but not as much confidence there. So that's not included in this severe weather warning, and also not expecting damaging wind gusts there. But have seen some decent rainfall there in the past 24 hours. The highest was at South Mission Beach with 369 millimetres in that 24 hours to 9 a.m. And even since 9 a.m. we've again seen around 30 to 80 millimetres so far just in the past 3.5 hours.
Now, all this sort of rainfall, there is like some flood warnings across the state and some flood watches. What's the latest?
So flood watch continues over most of the region. So it extends from western catchments to the northern and central catchments as well. So about roughly north of Mackay near the coast. Though most of that focus should be more north of Bowen and south of Cooktown is the expectation. And in terms of the flood warnings, so we have minor to major flooding still ongoing in the northwest and the northern interior. So the one major location is at Walker's Bend, just south of Normanton, or that may reach major any moment now. And also some moderate flooding at Richmond as well, and some moderate flood warnings for Cloncurry and River and for the Norman River as well.
Now, with all this rain and cloud cover, temperatures are down and it's pretty windy in some parts too. What is there a threat to livestock in these areas?
So there is that expectation, Megan, particularly in the northern and central interior and the northwest over the next few days. So yesterday we had those afternoon temperatures nudging up to 14, 15 degrees below average, particularly around the Julia Creek area. And so there is the expectation we'll see similar temperatures, so well below average during the afternoon underneath that heavy cloud cover. And with that persistent rain and those increased winds being funneled into the low in the northwest, quite likely to have quite a strong wind chill factor as well. So certainly is that potential there and fairly similar to what we saw in early 2019, so where we did see quite significant livestock losses then.
Now, heading away from the north for a little bit, what's the latest in sort of central and southern Queensland?
So most of central Queensland is just still seeing a bit of cloud cover, but typically some lighter showers overall. So most of the worst of it is north of Winton and Mackay or even Bowen at this stage, but still see some showers, potentially a thunderstorm or two for the next couple of days. We may have that rainfall shift a little bit further south over the next couple of days. So that system itself, that low, should start weakening from Wednesday. And so the heavy rainfall becoming a bit more isolated, but could also start extending a bit further south as well. So may go as far south potentially, that some of that increased rainfall, about as far south as Windora on Wednesday and Thursday. And then we may also see some return of some showers and thunderstorms to southern Queensland. So should largely be spared in the south for the next day or two. But from Wednesday, starting to see those thunderstorms returning. And just the outside chance we might see a severe thunderstorm around the Granite Belt and the Scenic Rim on the Thursday. So it'll be something to keep an eye on. And then looking further ahead, Megan, on Sunday we may have our next trough system pull down the remnants of all of this moisture more properly into southern Queensland. So we may see some more significant rainfall on Sunday and Monday next week. It doesn't look like nearly as bad as North Queensland's seeing at the moment, but could at least see some rainfall pushing up more into that 5 to 20 millimetre range.
And looking at coastal waters with all this sort of unsettled conditions, is there increased, wind or swells or anything like that?
So we do have some strong wind warnings just for the southern Gulf as those enhanced winds are being pulled into the low, and also quite blustery conditions across parts of the northeast coast with the Cairns and Townsville waters in strong wind warnings for today and tomorrow. But even further north, we could see the occasional squall coming through just as moving into that monsoon low. This should start to ease from the middle of the week as that low starts to weaken. And in the southeast, we also have a slightly increased winds today, mostly offshore, and so another strong wind warning there for the Sunshine Coast and the Gold Coast waters. That's largely due to a deep low near New Zealand, but even though it's a long way away, it's just still whipping up some increased winds there, and may also give us a brief period of some hazardous surf starting on Wednesday, so New Year's Eve. It may also be caused by that low, so that'll be a watch point for now. It's pretty likely for New South Wales, but it may also just creep over the border on that Wednesday afternoon.
And across the state, how will temperatures go this week? Are they going to stay down? Is there any chance of them getting a bit warmer? What's the go?
So most of northern and central Queensland will be sitting below and well below average for several days, at least during the afternoon. Southern Queensland, we get a little bit of some slightly warmer temperatures, slightly above average in the southern interior tomorrow, and that heat will push across more into the southeast on the Wednesday, New Year's Eve. Then expecting it'll be returning to average as we move into the new year, but still sitting generally around the mid to high 30s in the southern interior for the next few days. Elsewhere, as mentioned, generally fairly cool, typically in the low to mid-20s across much of the rest of the state, but expect that'll be returning to average as we move into the weekend.
Shane, thank you so much for your time today.
Thanks, Megan. Have a good afternoon.
You too. Shane Kennedy, Senior Forecaster at the Bureau of Meteorology.
Sulagong to serve.
The ABC brings you the story of an icon.
Avon Goolagong.
I know. Want you to win.
Goolagong.
That's what I mean.
Starts Sunday, January 4 on ABC TV and ABC iView.
This is the Country Hour on ABC Radio Queensland.
It's great having your company on the Country Hour today. If you want to join the conversation, shoot me a text on 0487 993 222. Fallon from Corumba has texted and he says, all the best for the season, Country Hour. And he said, after record December falls for Normanton, Corumba region, the woefully inadequate Mornington Island radar must be sorted. He said the money spent to revamp the Bureau's online assets could have dotted Northern Australia with proper radar detection. He said, Corumba is an important port and mariners here deserve better. Thank you for your text. We've also had another one come through about earlier story about the preparation that's been underway. And they said that the shopping centre at Mission Beach is already out of milk and bread. So, and as I said, you heard before the weather, how the northern supermarkets are preparing. Well, so are farmers across the region. Matthew Pappin is a cane farmer just south of Ingham. He's also been preparing ahead of this wet season after the devastating floods earlier this year. Mr. Pappin is speaking here to Brooke Tindall.
Concerning about flooding, you know, a lot of on the farm side of things, we've done earthworks and so forth to fix up from last year's event. So all of that sort of stuff is fresh and not stable yet, and to get an early flood is going to be devastating.
In terms of the cane, so you had an earlier finish to the crush this year, but does this earlier rain put that, you know, those new plantings and that sort of thing in a better position?
Look, yeah, an early finish, it was still towards the end of November, which is... it's earlier than what we have been having in the last few years, but still in all, it is not the best finish. It should have been earlier than that. But like I said, you know, farmers have been doing their fallow management programs where, like myself, I've got beans planted. They're just young beans coming up. And to have an early wet season, and well, not an early wet season, an early flood, is going to be, you know, devastating towards our fallow management, the farmings, the farms and so forth. Floods are no good for anyone.
And how much rain have you had here so far?
We've around 295 mils so far. I think around the Lucinda areas had about 440, something like that. So the district will be saturated now. And with more rain expected, yeah, this is the concerning part now of flooding. So,
I remember last year you were sort of stuck here because all those roads into town were cut off. Is there anything you've done differently to prepare at all, or, you know, have you made certain adjustments?
No, we just did our shopping yesterday. we've got our supplies. We've got fuel for generators and so forth, so no, we're right.
Is there much nervousness, or are people feeling more prepared, do you think, in the district?
I know myself I'm nervous. I've got infrastructure now that's been waiting for a drainage reserve to be opened up, but there's issues there with local council, and the farm, is getting inundated, and not only the farm, local dwellings. I've been trying to prepare, but I've been getting some pushback from local council, so...
And in terms of repairing everything that got damaged in the last wet season, was there a bit of a backlog for, you know, workers and to get those jobs done?
Yeah, definitely, Brooke. There's not enough contractors out there, time-wise as well. I just had a contractor clean Francis Creek, the fallen trees, only 2 weeks ago he did that job. But there's been, you know, riverbank infrastructure, creek bank infrastructure that's been repaired in the last couple of months, which is, you know, all fresh, freshly done, and to have a flood this early. Normally if you get a bit of rain and you get a bit of grass growth and stuff like that on it, and it packs a little bit from just general rain, you've got a good fighting chance of it staying there. But if you have a freshly done stuff, like, you know, fixing up riverbanks and so forth, and then a flood event, it's going to be quite devastating.
Matthew Pappin is a cane farmer near Ingham. He was speaking there to Brooke Tindall. It is 16 minutes to one. Now, while too much water is a problem at the moment in the north, on the coast, Further south, uncertainty over the supply of water is what's on people's minds. It's been a key topic in the Wide Bay Burnett this year, where farmers are eagerly awaiting the updated Paradise Dam. Work is still underway to build a new dam wall after significant structural issues. A firm timeline, though, is yet to be announced, but Director of the Bundaberg Regional Irrigators Group, Dale Hollis, says, fortunately, water allocations have been favourable.
Surface water started the year on 100% announced against nominal, which was a fantastic result. Price of electricity has been a major concern. The water energy nexus, I'm sorry, is pretty much paramount to how we operate in Bundaberg. And electricity prices have been a constant concern for a long time, but started an upwards trend again this year.
What were the big moments from 2025, or I guess what you guys would call a win?
Okay, so 3 years ago we put a proposal to the then Energy Minister, Lynham, to actually look at how much it was costing SunWater to deliver irrigation water to our hydrants. And that resulted in a rebate to irrigators for charges overcharging electricity prices. This year it was $15 a megalitre, but across the scheme over the past 3 years it was a bit over $4.5 million. So we consider that to be a pretty big win, and more importantly going forward it means that the actual electricity prices that SunWater charges are known and are set in the price path. So yeah, we think that's a bit of a win. Some of the other wins that we had was having the Casper in SunWater, the billing system, the expenses on it, which were allocated to irrigators, set aside. So that was another win. On the losses, as we go forward into the year, SunWater, QCA and the state government are looking at replacing the annuity renewal system with a RAB-based arrangement. We're not certain that that's a good move, particularly for irrigators, so we'll be looking at that closely.
What are you hoping for in terms of electricity relief next year? Is, you know, anything on the horizon?
When you actually boil down how electricity is charged, there's really no reason for the prices to be where they're at now. So what we're hoping for is that a number of the initiatives that we've been helping with actually get implemented, food and fibre tariffs, that sort of thing. There have been some gains in that area, but there's still more to be done. So we're hoping that we can build on that as far as the energy prices go. And, yeah, looking forward, I guess we're hoping for a reasonable reset of electricity prices when they get reassessed in June again.
What else is sort of on your radar as we approach 2026?
Like all things, I guess water is very important to Bundaberg. Irrigated agriculture, intensive irrigated agriculture is worth around about 25% of Bundaberg's total economy. So, yeah, it's something that we keep a very close eye on, and hopefully there won't be any surprises.
When we're talking about water security, work has been progressing a bit on Paradise Dam. You know, we had the road network upgraded, the very early stages there. Are you pleased to see that getting a bit of momentum?
We've been pleased with how the commitment to rebuilding Paradise Dam's been announced by both state and federal governments. I guess we're a little bit disappointed with the pace that it's occurring at, and hopefully that picks up as we progress into the year.
Dale Hollis is one of the directors of the Bundaberg Regional Irrigators Group. He was talking there to Taylor Larson.
Each weekday at noon,
we created the first IVF kangaroo egg.
Tune into the Country Hour.
Grow a variety of different garlics.
Celebrating 80 years of telling rural stories.
It is better to be safe than sorry.
On ABC Radio.
What we've now got is $300 million, Saddam's Aussie slush fund. John Howard talks about an inquiry. What I'd like to say today in absolutely clear-cut terms, this is a very big scandal.
That's Kevin Rudd when he was the Shadow Foreign Affairs Minister in 2006, talking about what led to maybe the biggest change in the wheat industry, the Australian Wheat Board Oil for Wheat scandal. Hello, I'm Annie Brown, and this year the Country Hour marks 80 years since it first went to air on ABC Radio on December 3rd, 1945. At the heart of the scandal was AWB Limited, which was accused of paying millions of dollars in kickbacks to Saddam Hussein's regime. Here's Matt O'Sullivan reporting on the Country Hour in October 2005.
Grain traders and growers are angry at confirmation that monopoly wheat exporter AWB was involved in corrupt payments during the Oil for Food program in Iraq. The United Nations report has found more than 2,000 companies were involved in making kickback payments to the Iraqi government to secure oil and humanitarian contracts between 1996 and 2003. AWB paid more than $290 million to a Jordanian trucking company, which ended up in the hands of the Iraqi government, a transaction which the UN says should have been questioned. Chris Brooks from grain trading company Brooks Grain says Australia's trade reputation is in tatters.
They've lost 2 million tonne of wheat sales this year just to Iraq. It's fairly indicative of what's to come. If any politician in Australia can stand up and try and justify to the Australian wheat growers that they should leave the single desk export marketing rights to the publicly listed company of AWB, then after this announcement, then they probably should be dragged out and flogged with a log.
Managing Director of AWB, Andrew Lindberg, denies any wrongdoing and says the company didn't know it was paying kickbacks to the Iraqi regime.
Perhaps with the wisdom of hindsight, clearly, maybe more inquiry should have been made, but it certainly appeared to us reasonable at the time to pay the fees in the knowledge that every contract had the explicit approval of the United Nations.
And the federal government says it has confidence in AWB's ability to continue to negotiate export deals. Trade Minister Mark Vaile says responsibility for checking the contracts under the Oil for Food program lay with the United Nations. He says the government won't be taking any action against AWB, and that time will tell whether future wheat export deals will be affected.
At the time, the scandal was described in dollar terms as the biggest corruption of its kind in Australia's history, and it prompted the Coal Inquiry. The Australian Wheat Board was founded by the government in 1939, and in 1999 it became a private company owned by wheat growers. The company used a single-desk system, where growers' produce was pulled together and sold in bulk to international markets. It was the only company allowed to export Australian wheat overseas. After the scandal broke at the AWB AGM in 2006, growers and shareholders turned out in record numbers, looking for answers on the future of the company. Edwina Farley filed this report from the meeting.
Flanks of security guards, police and metal detectors made it no ordinary AGM. In fact, the attitude of AWB executives was pretty much, behave yourselves or you'll get thrown out. Louise House, grower and shareholder from Western Australia, also made an impassioned plea for debate to consider the successful history of both the single desk and AWB.
I feel very, very strongly that there has been a very much a major media beat-up about the AWB, and the single desk supports Australian growers and especially West Australian growers extremely well, and it distresses me greatly that Australians are now doing to themselves what the Americans have tried to do for 65 years and never succeeded.
Brendan Stewart refused to answer many questions during proceedings, pointing to the ongoing coal inquiry as the reason. And the meeting was peppered with a multitude of hushed discussions between Stewart, acting CEO Peter Polson, and legal advisers from law firm Arnold Bloch Leibler. It made for a frustrating meeting for those growers who wanted some answers, and for Jeff Reed from the Shareholders Association, who held 400,000 proxy votes for the meeting, a meeting he described as disappointing.
Disappointed because the problems besetting the company have been recognised, but there's no action plan proposed to restore the company's reputation. Disappointed because Mr. Lindberg wouldn't turn up and face the music. And disappointed because the board couldn't bring themselves to say, sorry, they've messed up and shareholders have lost 30% of the value.
The single desk system was abolished in 2008 and the market deregulated, opening up Australia to foreign wheat export companies. Celebrating 80 years of rural stories on the Country Hour, I'm Annie Brown.
You're listening to the Queensland Country Hour on your radio, online and on the ABC Listen app.
From fencing that can bounce back after flood damage to keeping dairy effluent out of waterways, landholders are working with the Mary River Catchment Coordinating Committee to improve the environment. Alana Ebert manages the Upper Mary River Care Program with funding from SEQ Water. She's speaking here to Jennifer Nichols.
We've been doing so much work this year. We've had 14 different workshops with landholders. They've told us the things that they want to learn about. So this year we had a vine ID workshop to help people tell the difference between the weeds and the native vines. We had a really great workshop on riparian fencing. It's a big drama for people because they want to look after their riparian zone on their waterway properties, and so they have to fence it. But often there's been so many floods, especially in the last couple of years, and it's a lot of work to put the fencing back up.
Fencing's been a huge focus for the MRCCC's work with landholders because if you're allowing cattle and horses on fragile riverbanks, they smash it and cause erosion. Yeah. But so many floods, what sorts of tips did the landholders have about what works?
Yeah, look, trying to fence in line with the flow of the river was a big one. So trying not to cut off areas where the river's flowing through. So as much as you can, fence along with the flow. A few other things that people had tried were like little floodgates. So in some instances, landholders have had to fence across little waterways, whether it's because they need to keep out the neighbours' cattle or because they need to
contain their own,
yeah. That was a big topic. And there were some really ingenious things that people had come up with after trial and error, like even just a piece of wire hung across a waterway with some Rio rods hanging down, holding on to a length of rod at the bottom. And so when the flood came through, this landholder's fence would get pushed up. It'd push up the rods and the bottom rod would drop out, but then the fence was okay. It was still hanging there. It was on a really tightly strung wire. It was electrified. And so they were able to just quickly come along and put the rod back up into these little hooks. It was ingenious. And it's the stuff that these guys had spent like 20 years living in the place before they'd got to that point. They tried every other thing and everything was really hard and difficult. So, yeah, really good little tips from landholders. Yeah.
How excited would everybody else be to learn from that? And that's something that you can now share with landholders everywhere along the Mary River.
Yeah, and really fun and really nice to see landholders learning from each other.
You've been doing some very progressive work with dairy farmers.
Yeah, this year we've got a new funding program with funding from the Office of the Great Barrier Reef, and we've started doing some water quality testing with dairy farmers to trace the flow of pathogens and nutrients coming through and across the farm and then into the adjacent waterways. We kind of thought it might be a bit controversial and that dairy farmers might be a bit worried about having data collected on the stuff that was coming off their land, but we've actually had a number of farmers coming to us and putting their hands up to join the program because they want to know. They want to know what's happening on their land and what's coming off their land into the waterways. So, yeah, it's been a really great project.
How many dairy farms would you have involved in the project now?
There's four farms that we're actually doing the water quality testing with, but we're hoping that through the program we'll develop some materials and information that we can then disperse more broadly. As a result of that program and information getting out in the local community, we've had a few more dairy farmers come knocking on our door and just wanting to work with us more generally. We've been a little bit limited in the past in terms of only having funding to really deal with the Upper Mary with SEQ Water funding, but yeah, this program's opened up a bit more space and we're able to deal with landholders a bit further downstream.
What are some of the other things you're doing to try to keep the nutrients on the land instead of in the waterway?
Yeah, a lot of effluent management projects with dairy farms. So we've been working to do some planning. So we've got some specialist dairy effluent designers who will come out and do plans on properties. And so they calculate the amount of washed down water from the dairy and do a whole lot of numbers and calculations to figure out what's happening with that water and the washdown and how do we contain it and separate it so that the land managers can deal with it and get the benefits from the nutrients in it. So solid separation traps, laneway repairs, hardened laneways. This year we did a really simple project, which was just putting guttering on a dairy and on an adjacent shed and installing some water tanks to capture the rainwater and link that system together.
That was Alana Ebert from the Mary River Catchment Coordinating Committee speaking to Jennifer Nichols. Thank you so much for your company on the Country Hour today. I'll be back with you from tomorrow at midday to bring you all the latest, and I'll bring you up-to-date information on the situation in the Northwest though. But keep listening to your local ABC radio. More will be coming up after 1 o'clock. But now it's time for the news. It's 1 o'clock.